My name is Barney Ragg. I am the Vice President of eLabs for Universal Music Group. As a brief overview, I thought I'd begin by explaining who Universal Music Group is. Universal Music Group is the world's largest record company. We're probably more familiar to most of you under the names of our record labels. Some of those include the Island Record Label, Def Jam, Interscope, Motown, Polygram, MCA, and many others that we hold in our group. eLabs, the group that I'm responsible for, is the online strategy and business development group that reports directly to the worldwide executive committee on these topics. My objective today is to try to give you our interpretation of webcasting versus broadcasting and to look specifically at the issues that affect the difference between these two types of communication channel. I've tried to break this down primarily into four key areas that we see immediately in front of us. Having done this, I will present some examples of webcasting which we feel are successful and beneficial to the broadcaster and to us as the content company. And I'll also give an example of where we see problems with webcasting and where we feel that would not be beneficial to the broadcaster or to the rights holders. One of the key things with webcasting as opposed to broadcasting is it is impossible to define the territory for which a webcast is being issued. Today, the only reliable technology that exists for identifying the location of a consumer online is via a third-party service, such as their credit card billing address. To the best of my knowledge, there represents no technical way to identify geographically where somebody listening to a free-to-air webcast is located. This clearly causes us great concern when we talk about international programming that would take away from or degrade from programming specifically tailored for individual markets and the protection that we may want to give to broadcasters attempting to address an individual cultural market. Secondly, webcasting by its very nature is entirely interactive. Even when somebody is consuming a stream and not interacting with the stream, their computer communicates with the server that provides that stream. This has a large number of consequences for webcasting, which is significantly different from that of traditional broadcasting. Firstly, when a consumer's client, the piece of software that they're using to access the stream, communicates with the server, it's possible for it to establish a security system for transfer of the data between the server and the client. We heard this morning from Mr. Greenstein that when a stream is transferred, it's not stored on the client computer. This is not an intrinsic property of streaming or webcasting. The property of not storing the file on the computer is only determined by the client application that processes the stream. This is to say that many streams can be transferred across a network to a client computer and recorded and stored on that client computer for later offline, completely random access to the content. The other aspect about interactivity and the aspect about webcasting is that it relies on the consumer having an internet connection. As we all know, internet connections are currently not freely available to most consumers. There is a commercial transaction between the internet service provider and the consumer wishing to have access to the online service. This very clearly grays and complicates the commercial relationship between a webcaster, the ISP, and the consumer. We already heard in Mr. Roback's presentation that webcasting is a compelling reason for consumers to upgrade to broadband. This is a compelling reason for consumers to spend increased revenues with a broadband service provider. Again, this is completely different to a traditional free-to-air broadcast model, where once the infrastructure cost has been covered, multiple people can access that broadcast at zero incremental cost and are not paying in a free-to-air model for the development or service provided by the broadcaster. We also see in webcasting a massive amount of channel development. We're seeing webcasting facilitating low investment programming and low investment production. It's very simple for a webcaster to quickly put together very tailored production, very tailored streams or services to meet a consumer's demand. We heard Mr. Roback this morning saying that this avoided the limitation of programmed broadcasting. From a content holder's point of view, programmed broadcasting is one of the significant values that broadcasting brings to our industry. When we talk about content discovery, as you heard in the presentations this morning, we think that programming is a vital part of that. It's important that we mix new and culturally important content with content that is already popular that consumers are demanding. If we move to a situation where consumers can freely demand content without the ability to expose new content, we fear that the value of programmed channels will, and the value of broadcasting will be significantly eroded. It's also key that with webcasting, there is no standard web device. We're seeing multiple devices appearing that can access webcasted streams. We've already heard talk this morning about internet-connected devices and also wireless devices. In the UK, Universal is currently participating in an online streaming service for mobile telephones. This streaming service allows a user to listen to a file while it's streamed to them, but the stream is also recorded to their mobile telephone. The business model for that streaming service is significantly different from the business model for an FM radio broadcast. One of the clear problems with webcasting is that to date, there does not exist a single definition for webcasting, its service, or the business model around it. The services that we've seen to date differ widely in the purpose that they're trying to achieve. The offer that they're trying to present to the content company and to the consumer varies widely depending on how the streaming service works. I'd like to remind you that, as I mentioned previously, streaming itself does not remove the file from a consumer's computer. And there are business model cases where you would want to allow somebody to view a simulcast in real time, but store that on their machine for later consumption. How do we define a webcaster within those environments? We're also seeing a massive number of heterogeneous services. This means that the variation of content and the presentation of content is enormous in many different ways. And I'll talk later in this presentation about how that can give us a problem with disaggregation of program services. There is enormous scope for webcasters to implement security at source. Because each webcasting client communicates with a server uniquely, they can identify themselves, describe the process in which they wish to consume the stream, and also have security technology dynamically downloaded to the device. In most of the webcasting deals that Universal has done to date, we include webcasting security, which is agreed between Universal and the webcasting provider. We feel that webcasting is becoming closer to third-party services, such as download or purchase services, rather than communication of programming. I think Mr. Roback's comment in response to one of the questions asked, which was, if you have enough bandwidth, you don't need downloading anymore, goes further to indicate the point that these two things can very closely be knitted together. I wanted to briefly walk through an example service that we're currently running in Europe. We were approached by a major European broadcaster who wanted to offer programming online. At the time of broadcast, at the time of traditional on-air broadcast, they also wanted to offer it online, but but they also wanted to offer on their website the capability for consumers to go at a later date to listen to the broadcast programming. So effectively to have a website-based, time-shifted programming. We worked with the broadcaster to agree security provisions for the protection of the programming that would be streamed to the consumer. These included the review of how the files were kept on servers, the hiding and obfuscation of URLs, which are the topics that were talked about this morning, but also encryption of the stream, such that if anybody intercepted the stream between the server and the client, the stream would be unintelligible. The broadcaster also agreed usage. This is a very key area where we defined the business model that the broadcaster was trying to address. In this case, we agreed that the programming would be available for online consumption on personal computers only. We were able to specify the types of hardware, the types of operating system, and the consumption client that was allowed to have access to the stream. This was done to define the commercial exchange between the broadcaster and Universal and what they were purchasing. Specifically, we felt it was appropriate, both the broadcaster and Universal as a content company, to rule out wireless transmission where the business models around the provision of bandwidth and the cost of bandwidth are extremely different. Typically, in wireless, we're seeing consumers pay very, very high prices for their access to online services. Consumers are buying very different content at very different pricing in a wireless environment than they are in a connected fixed line environment. Having discussed these issues, we were able to agree commercial terms with this broadcaster, and this service still runs today. I also wanted to give you an example of where we see problems with webcasting, particularly in respect of the disaggregation of programmed content. Webcasters, as we've seen, could very simply distribute large numbers of channels. Unlike many traditional broadcast channels, each channel can provide metadata about what is being broadcast. This allows the development of web clients. Client software is running on the PC or wireless device that's accessing the stream to rapidly browse or, if you like, sniff what is being broadcast on multiple webcast streams simultaneously. This very quickly allows a user to say, I would only like to listen to this type of content. I would only like to listen to or view this type of video. And it removes entirely the value that we see from programming. In this sense, the web client very quickly behaves like a jukebox or an on-demand type of service. In summary, Universal opposes the extension of the PROS treaty to include webcasters. We feel that webcasting is a term that encompasses so many different business models and so many different consumer offers that it's very difficult to have a defined definition that's understandable and that would consequently have value to be included in this treaty. We don't believe that there is scope for limitation of territory on free-to-air webcasts, and we're very concerned about how that impacts our current relationship with broadcasters and the values that broadcasters bring locally in each territory. We feel that webcasting is very much more akin to a third-party service, and as we've heard this morning, the differences as we go into the future between webcasting and downloaded services will migrate and combine. And therefore, we feel that it's important that webcasting rights should be negotiated directly with content holders, where the rights and the security provisions around those webcasts can be negotiated on a case-by-case basis. Thank you very much.